Pam is the HR person at ISIS, the spy agency on the show. And she's horrible at her job because she's a total gossip.
Mm-hmm.
And like everyone else there, she's a heavy drinker and, you know, she's kind of promiscuous and she's just kind of a mess. Have I characterized her well?
Very well.
You also did a forum on Reddit inviting fans to write in with their questions about Pam.
Yeah.
What is one of the stranger questions or more entertaining questions that you've gotten?
Let's see. I always get the general, like, what would she do in this situation or what's coming up next season? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't write the show.
And what would her favorite books be?
Oh, my gosh. Who knows? Like, probably the Art of War.
Yeah, by Lao Tzu, right? Like,
yeah.
Ancient Chinese book.
A crock pot cookbook, you know, a one pot meal cookbook.
Your background is acting in comedy and improv. What was it like to go from doing that to doing voicing for an animated show? My understanding is that not only are all the actors not in the same room, but you'll record your parts at different times. And when I think about improv, I think about this energy of a group in a room, and it's very dependent on that. And this is very different in that way. Where do you get your energy?
Yeah, at first it was very hard. When I first started doing voice work, I went into the booth, I was like standing, arms next to my side, like very stern, just like not moving and talking into the microphone. And one of the guys that was on the other side said, you got to move your body. Like, you're an actor. You've got to bring that out in your voice any way you can. So now I'm just like all over the place. And when I come out of the booth, I'm sweaty. And the great thing is now, you know, five seasons in, we know all the voices and all the actors so well that we can kind of imagine what they would sound like and how it would be to play with them. So it brings a little bit of life into the studio.
Tell us about the first book that you've brought in to tell us about.
Okay, so the first book I brought in is Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West. It was the first time I read a book and was like, oh, this is why people read. Because I was never a reader growing up. My sister was a big reader. Like, she'd always get in trouble for reading at the dinner table. And I thought to myself, like, why would anybody want to read? Ew. And then my first job out of school was working at a wilderness camp in South Georgia. And at the end of the day, I was so exhausted and I wanted to just escape, and somebody gave me this book and I took it to camp, and once I started reading it, I would get into bed and I just would like go away into this world and read this book, and it really changed my mind about reading and reading fiction. I'd never really gotten into reading fiction before this.
What is Wicked about?
Well, this is what I love about Wicked. In The Wizard of Oz, you see the story from Dorothy's point of view. And in this, you see the story from the Wicked Witch's point of view. So it's basically her story of how she became who she is and the story of Oz and what's really going on there.
It's not a kid's book.
No, it's not a kid's book at all.
The copy you brought with you is a little bit battered. Is that the very same copy that you got at camp?
Yeah, it's totally like been rained on and there's dirt on it and it's just like definitely well worn for sure.
Obviously, it's been a while since you've read it.
Yeah.
Do you remember what struck you about it right away?
At the very beginning of the book, there's a map of what Oz really looks like. And then you can go back and look at the map and see like, oh, well, that's why this is happening, because they're encroaching on this other group's land. And it takes something so innocent that you remember so well and shows you the dirty underbelly of it.
Right. It makes this sort of story that you learned about when you were a little kid seem real. I think the map definitely does that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand in that way someone who didn't enjoy reading fiction, because what is there to connect you to that? This was something to connect you to that. It was sort of this thing you learned when you were a little kid. Well, here's the real story.
Right. And one of the things that it reminds me of is I used to always have this recurring dream that the apartment that I live in has either a basement or some weird room I've never seen before. And that's what I feel like Wicked is like. It's like, you know this place so well. It's a part of culture. It always has been. And then all of a sudden, there's this room you've never seen before.
And Wicked has since become this like blockbuster musical.
Yeah.
Do you sing? Is this something you would want to do?
I don't sing. I wish I could. I've always wanted, like when I hear somebody really belt out a song, I think like, That must be so freeing. It must be like flying, like being a bird. And I have like the most horrific voice. I've always wanted to be a singer, and especially being a performer and a stage performer. The more you can do, the better off you're going to be. And I can't dance and I can't sing. And like, I don't really move around all that well on stage, you know? So no, I can't sing. I can't sing at all. And actually when I was, this is just a little side note, when I was in kindergarten, at my elementary school, they were doing they were auditioning for chorus. So all the girls wanted to audition for chorus. So I was like, I'm gonna audition for chorus too. And I just had bronchitis, but I was getting over it, but I still sounded a little croaky. And I was 5 years old. And I remember getting to school early for my audition. And the music teacher was like at the piano. And I opened the door, and the door is like so heavy, I can barely open it. And I walk in, and she's like, okay, I just want you to sing Happy Birthday. So I stand there and I sing Happy Birthday. And I was like, I think I did okay. And then a week later, or maybe a few days later, they put the list out of who was going to be in chorus. And everybody that had auditioned was in chorus, except for me. So after that, I was like, I'm never singing again. Isn't that terrible?
Tell us about, what is the next book you brought in?
So the next book I brought in is called Save the Cat, the last book on screenwriting that you'll ever need. If you have never written a screenplay before, if you follow this, you'll probably come up with one that is decent. At least it'll be the story structure that people are used to seeing from Hollywood movies.
So the book basically gives us different plot devices we can use. Can you give us an example?
You've got to make characters memorable. This is what he says. Make sure every character has a limp and an eye patch. And so as an improviser, a lot of times you don't have costumes, you don't have props, you don't have anything other than your body to diversify your characters with traits and physicality. A lot of times we use the example of a character that smokes.
And the title itself is another suggested device, right?
Yes.
Save the Cat. What is that referring to?
So Save the Cat, he talks about you have to love your main character. And it happens all the time when we're writing a script at the theater. We will be like, there's something wrong. There's something missing from this character. We don't care about him. And so what he says is, if that's missing, it's because there isn't a save the cat moment, a moment that the main character does something that makes you care about him, no matter how good or bad that character may be. So they might save a cat from, you know, a burning house.
What movies has this book opened up for you, or maybe even ruined for you?
Children's movies in particular follow this structure to the T. Like I went and saw, I think it was Brave, and it was so obvious that what was coming next. But I think it doesn't ruin it for me because it's very comfortable. If you see a movie that the story isn't told this way, it feels a little weird because this is the way we're used to seeing them.
Tell us about your third book.
Okay, so my third book is Tina Fey's Bossy Pants. Being a woman in comedy, you kind of have to. Oh my God, you just saw the picture of her on the back.
That's, I did.
So funny.
It's a picture of her at like what it looks like she's like 11.
Yeah.
And awkward as all get out with a terrible haircut.
Yeah, terrible haircut.
Tina Fey.
Right. I had a terrible haircut when I was that age too. But being a woman in comedy, it's kind of impossible to not be influenced in some way by Tina Fey. She's such a successful comedian, but she's also so real and self-deprecating, but also powerful. And her comedy's very fresh and new and exciting. And to see that be so popular is really wonderful. So when this book came out, I was like so excited to hear more about who she is as a person and not just who she is on television. And the book does not disappoint. It's really, really hilarious.
So Bossy Pants is Tina Fey's memoir. What things in the book particularly resonated with you? Did you read and say, she got that right, that is dead on?
Totally. So many things. I think the thing that I found most interesting and exciting was that when people in Hollywood or people in television talk about comedy, most of them come from a stand-up background. And there's kind of this feeling that improv is like not as cool as stand-up. So to hear somebody that is as amazing as Tina Fey talk about improv with a real love for it kind of legitimizes it to a larger audience, which I really appreciated because she never did stand-up. She came from Second City and she did improv. And so there's actually a thing in here. Let me find it and I'll read it. Here it is. I moved to Chicago in 1992 to study improv, and it was everything I wanted it to be. It was like a cult. People ate, slept, and definitely drank improv. They worked at crappy day jobs just to hand over their money for improv classes. In retrospect, it may have been a cult. And I feel that way about Dad's Garage, too. It's like, you know, you find your family in the weirdest places, and then that's all you do. I've been at Dad's Garage for, I mean, since 99, so 14 years, and all my friends now are from there.
I wonder if the whole comedians looking down on improv, do you think it has to do with the lack of sort of ironic remove that improv folks tend to have? Because you don't really have that. You're in a moment and you're really in it, like an actor is, versus making fun of everything.
Exactly. Like, I feel like as a stand-up, you can have this, like, removed, sarcastic way of looking at the world. But as an improviser, you've got to, like, be a chicken in a scene sometimes. So you have to kind of be willing to look stupid. We even talk about that when we teach classes. Like, you got to be willing to look stupid, and you've got to commit to what's going on. And it doesn't always work. And you don't always have control over what's going on. Like, as a stand-up, you can write and rewrite and try things and make a perfect set. But in improv, you might be in a scene with somebody that wants to do a scene about something you don't want to do a scene about, but you have to go there because that's the promise that you're making with your scene partners and to the audience.
What other stuff in there really resonated with you?
She talks about when she's kind of growing up, and she's like just this like weird looking brown haired girl, and kind of what women have to deal with and body image and all this stuff. And there's some great, so she talks about, I'll just read this passage. Let's see. This was the late 70s, and the 70s were a small-eyed, thin-lipped, blonde woman's paradise. I remember watching Three's Company as a little brown-haired girl thinking, really? This is what we get? Joyce DeWitt is our brunette representative? She's got that greasy-looking bowl cut, and they make her wear suntan pantyhose under her football jersey nightshirt. I may have only been 7 or 8, but I knew that this sucked. And, like, I grew up in the 80s. She's a little older than I am. But I remember thinking the same thing. It's like, you know, if you're not Cheryl Teagues or Farrah Fawcett, like, you're nothing, you know? So it's nice to hear her kind of take on all those things that I thought when I was growing up, too. It's such a great book, and it's such a fast read that if you haven't read it yet, it's such a good, like, throw it in your bag and read it while you're waiting in line for something. It's so wonderful, and she's so funny. And if you love comedy and you love Tina Fey, you've got to read this book.
One thing we do on every segment of Page Turners is we ask our guests if they have a quotation from a writer about writing that they'd like to share with us. Do you have one for us?
I do. Alex Hoffman says, "Books may well be the only true magic."
Thank you so much, Amber Nash, for coming
in. Sure. Thank you. I had such a great time.